You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
It's Sam Cedar, launching an illegal invasion and occupation of your brain.
This episode of The Majority Report is brought to you by Credo Mobile. With Credo, your voice reflects your values. Check out credomobile.com/majority for details.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS
and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, December 13th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, independent journalist Max Blumenthal live from Cairo, Egypt, in anticipation, perhaps, of a referendum on the Constitution that is set to take place there in just 2 days. Also on the program today, is it a game changer by the Fed? Well, I guess it depends on what game you think is actually going on. Meanwhile, Republicans really in disarray. According to a leading congressional Republican, they have a big a-hole factor problem. And not a-hole, but actually, well, asshole factor problem. Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise.
Also on the program today, HSBC. You know the old saying, what's the best way to rob a bank? Own one. Well, apparently, the best way to commit just about any crime is to own a bank or be a bank. More on that as the show continues. And some interesting follow-up on the so-called right-to-work statute in Michigan. We'll also talk about the fiscal cliff in the context of, or fiscal slope, fiscal bluff, austerity bomb, whatever. I'll tell you, the left is really good on galvanizing around one counter narrative. But be that as it may, even though our branding of this thing, it seems to be going fairly well, at least at this point. Getting to this Fed story, a lot of people are hailing this as a big, big deal, and I think it's a moderately sized deal. The Federal Reserve will take steps to bolster the economy if you believe they have the power to do this. And this is of some controversy, both on the left and the right, depending on which economist you talk to. Nevertheless, the Fed chair has announced that at the very least they're accepting explicitly their dual mandate, which is to provide price controls and deal with unemployment. So the Fed will continue, or at the very least has set new benchmarks, which is they will continue to ease and hold ease monetary policy and hold down interest rates until the unemployment rate falls to 6.5% or inflation looks like it's likely to exceed 2.5%. Up to this point, the only thing the Fed has at least publicly said that they're interested in is maintaining a 2% inflation rate. It said it would buy $45 billion in Treasury bonds a month on top of the $40 billion a month that's already buying in mortgage bonds. The theory is this will flood the markets with money, reduced interest rates on a wide range of differing loans, and this will supposedly stimulate borrowing. I'm a little skeptical that giving more money to the banks, who seem to be sitting on a lot of cash anyways, is going to make a difference in terms of stimulating borrowing. However, it is at least a positive sign that the Fed is recognizing that they should send a signal that rates will not go up until we have hit a certain benchmark in terms of unemployment and or a higher threshold for inflation. Fed expects unemployment rate at the end of next year to be between 7.3% and 7.7%. There is there are economists out there who say what we really should be doing is aiming for a 3 or 4% inflation rate, and we shouldn't be using unemployment, rather employment, as a measure in which the Fed to change its disposition. But be that as it may, most people are perceiving this as a positive step, even if you believe that there are more efficient ways for the Fed to do this than just enriching bankers. But who knows? Maybe they'll just stop laundering drug money now. I doubt it. The official announcement was involved this statement: to support continued progress toward maximum employment and price stability, the committee expects that a highly accommodative stance of monetary policy will remain appropriate for a considerable amount of time after the asset purchase program ends and the economic recovery strengthens. So, in other words, we're going to keep buying bonds, and we're going to recognize that we have this dual mandate, and we're going to maintain this disposition until we get to a certain threshold for employment. So, supposedly what will also happen is, with a higher inflation rate target of 2.5%, you've got certain investment vehicles will look a little bit less attractive, and investors will go out and pursue a slightly more risky strategy to raise their rates of return. I don't know what's going to happen. So, but that's that. Maybe we'll have somebody on down the road to talk about that incredibly dry but apparently very relevant new policy. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Max Blumenthal. Hey, Majority Report listeners know that we try to put our money where our mouth is when it comes to our sponsors. And I can't say enough about Credo Mobile. They're our newest sponsor, and they're the only progressive cell phone company in the world. Well, at least in this country.
This is really the best of both worlds for me, speaking of worlds. We get to support an organization that fights Republican Tea Party extremists, one that holds Democrats accountable, one that funds the progressive movement and nonprofits, and helps keep this show on the air. And on top of that, they're offering you an amazing deal. If you sign up before December 31st, you go to credomobile.com/majority. You get 40% off your monthly voice fee for the first year. You get true unlimited data. And then they'll even give you a buyout credit of $350 to get out of your contract with one of those big corporate providers right now. So go to credomobile.com/majority. Check out the deal they're offering. Give them a call. Their customer service is fantastic. Check out the actions that they're taking. Check out that the money that they gave just in 2011 alone from the 1% that came from all of their users' bills to nonprofits. You're going to be very impressed with this company, and I think you're going to love their service. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone live from Cairo, Egypt, actually on the banks of the Nile. Max Blumenthal, welcome to the program, Max.
Great to be back on with you.
So, Max, give us now, how long have you been in Egypt?
I've been here for 2 weeks, and actually the original plan was to go after 1 week. To the Gaza Strip, but I can't seem to get my permission authorized. I've been obstructed by the bureaucracy here. And, you know, I thought in the new Egypt, the post-revolutionary Egypt, administration wouldn't participate in the siege of Gaza as it had in the past under Mubarak, but they still are. And so I've, you know, managed to have a pretty interesting time covering the events here. And, you know, Egypt is still in a revolutionary moment.
Yeah. All right. Well, actually, I would love to talk to you about their disposition in terms of what's happening in Gaza. But let's take us back here. Now, over the past 2 weeks, we've seen a massive pushback against Morsi's I don't know what else to call it. I guess massive power grab. Just give us a sense, you know, somewhat chronologically, if you could, is as to what you've been seeing and what's happening there and what's about to happen in the next couple of days.
When I arrived, the night I arrived, I walked out of my apartment in Garden City and was overcome by tear gas. There were basically riots outside the American embassy, which is now surrounded by concrete walls and state security. And, you know, the instability moves from neighborhood to neighborhood, from area to area. Right now, it's really quiet. And the trigger point was President Mohamed Morsi's decree giving him unlimited power over the judiciary, and then the emergence of a draft constitution, basically the new constitution of post-revolutionary Egypt, that was basically drawn up only by the Muslim Brotherhood and its Salafist allies. It's an extremely divisive document that limits women's and minority rights, that now gives the military the power to arrest citizens, including for insulting a military officer, which is part of Morsi's deal to keep the military in its supreme position, to basically preserve the deep state. And preserve the Muslim Brotherhood's political dominance. And so what basically has happened is you know, by taking Morsi won 51% of the vote in an election against a figure who was aligned with the old regime, with the Mubarak regime, Shafiq. And many Egyptians felt like they had no good choice in the election. I think a lot of liberals in the U.S. can relate to that. Except this is actually an even more divided society. And many people, including liberals in Egypt, cast their lot with Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood, with Islamists, because they thought this was at least a better alternative to the old regime and to the military. They thought, you know, this would allow the revolution to at least proceed. And what wound up happening was that Morsi has left them completely out in the cold, drafting a constitution that doesn't take into account all these other political forces in Egypt. And so you have millions of people who feel left out, and they've taken to the streets. And on Saturday, the country is supposed to vote on the constitution through a constitutional referendum. In a referendum, usually the yes side wins. That's just the way it has traditionally gone. And the Muslim Brotherhood has an unparalleled political machine. Right. They've instilled discipline in their members that's even, you know, exceeds that of the Christian right in the U.S. So the opposition kind of expects to lose. And that's why you see these street protests. It's why we're seeing periodic violence. I witnessed the most intense street clashes I've ever seen in my life outside the presidential palace last Wednesday. The presidential palace has become ground zero for a protest. Its walls are covered in graffiti. This is a powerful symbol of the delegitimization of or the illegitimacy of Morsi in the eyes of many Egyptians. And outside my hotel 3 nights ago, there were street clashes. Basically, I watched guys shoot at each other and attack each other with batons from my balcony. There's a really nice alarm clock at 4 in the morning. And this is a block from Tahrir Square. So anything can happen between now and Saturday when the vote takes place.
And so now, just stepping back for a moment, at one point now, Morsi assumed certain basically executive authorities and then ostensibly reversed himself but maintained the decisions he had already made under that authority. So basically the damage was done in terms of delegitimizing and basically draining the courts of their power. Where does that stand? Is that still basically status quo from where it was, I guess, a week and a half ago now?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, by kind of shifting position and bringing a few of the more mealy-mouthed opposition figures into the dialogue, he's weakened the opposition. But at the same time, he's co-opted the military by giving them the power to arrest citizens and preserving them in a role that kind of exists above the state. You know, he's supposed to be the commander in chief of the military. So, I'm sorry, there's a loud boat going by.
No, it sounds fine.
I think that the opposition's anger has deepened because of what he's done with the constitution. The Egyptian Judges Club, which presides over the polling places, the 13,000 polling places where Egyptians will vote on Saturday, is refusing to participate in the referendum. So only about 7,000 judges, these are like, you know, poll watchers, will be able to participate. So I don't even know how the vote will take place. And beyond that, there's an article in the Constitution that everyone in Egypt agrees that that Sharia should be influence the way laws are made. It's just sort of like Judeo-Christian influence over laws in the 18th century when the founding fathers drew up the Declaration of Independence, to the extent that they had any. But there's always been a mosque called the Al-Azhar Mosque, which is a 1,000-year-old institution which has unparalleled expertise in interpreting Sharia law into the Egyptian legal canon, and their power has basically been stripped by the constitution, and the Brotherhood and its Salafist allies are basically giving anyone the power to interpret Sharia into the Egyptian legal canon. So you even have Islamic elements in Egypt. The old Islamic establishment is up in arms about the constitution. It's not just civilian judges.
So give us a sense of who the opposition is and how it's changed. You have a piece in NSFW Corp, which we will link to on the on the Majority FM site. But give us a sense, because one of the things that seems to be, or at least that your reporting suggests, is that the latest moves by Morsi have activated a different sector of Egyptian society than we have at least heretofore seen be active in this sense.
Yeah, that's a great question. And right now the opposition is like the Star Wars bar. It's like a bunch of people who a bunch of forces and elements who are united by little more than their resentment, loathing, and suspicion of Mohamed Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood. The most visible faction of the opposition is the National Salvation Front, who I profiled, and their most well-known figure is Mohamed El-Baradei, who we all know is the former head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, who was trying to get inspections in Iraq and, you know, battling with George W. Bush. And he, won a lot of credibility in Egypt as a result of his international renown. And there are other figures in this coalition who range from center to liberal to the Nasserist left. And then you have all these people who were loyalists of the old regime. You have the upper middle class in Egypt who are suspicious of the Tahrir Square revolutionaries, who saw them as foreign agents. And you have lower class nationalists and all these people who just reject the Muslim Brotherhood's vision for Egypt and exist outside of the Brotherhood's moral framework. And they're suddenly joining these protests that we're seeing. Many of them are known sort of derisively as Falul in Egypt. That word kind of signals old regime loyalists. And so you have people going out. Where I am right now is an island called Zimalek in Cairo. It's surrounded by the Nile, and it's sort of a bastion of wealth and the upper middle class. It's very cosmopolitan. And half of the island is taken up by a club called the Gezira Club. And it's sort of a private sports club where the elite hang out. And they've been marching from the Gezira Club to Tahrir Square and the presidential palace every week, these well-coiffed people. And they've actually asked for instructions on how to protest because they've never been in protest before. So what you have is the old Tahrir Square left-wing revolutionaries in a coalition with people who many of whom wished death upon them back in January 2011. It's a very weird moment.
So, I mean, on balance, I mean, clearly the Muslim Brotherhood has been an entity in Egypt for 100 years, and give or take. And though they were outlawed, they clearly obviously had an organizational structure, which is where a lot of their power comes from when you're talking about a referendum. Is there a sense that the opposition, if it were to be able to coalesce and organize, and obviously it's not going to happen in the next 2 days, but is the opposition in and of itself strong enough ultimately to at least provide some check on what Morsi will do? Or is this just sort of like he's slowly building the blocks here with the Constitution and whatnot to dampen that threat and to begin to sort of just cleave off different elements of that opposition?
Well, starting with the Brotherhood, there was a piece I saw in, I think, Foreign Affairs or Foreign Policy about how they're comprised of people who are, quote unquote, high modernists. Basically, they're the sons of the rural poor who have emerged as engineers and doctors and businessmen. And they see themselves as, the people who should have the sole right to implement the reforms in a technocratic manner that Egypt needs. And I sort of don't agree with this analysis. I think what really defines the Muslim Brotherhood is the fact that they have been organizing for this moment for 50 or 60 years, and that they've, been horribly repressed. Their members have been tortured and imprisoned, and they've implemented a sort of hierarchical structure that was once an underground structure, and that kind of structure is what we're seeing through the government of Mohamed Morsi, who is really seen as a stooge or an empty suit of Shatter, who is The deputy of the Supreme Guide of the Muslim Brotherhood. He's a multimillionaire businessman, and he's really calling the shots. So Morsi has all these advisors, and they're all quitting because they're not advising. He's basically taking orders through a hierarchical structure of a former underground movement. And, you know, beyond that, what the opposition is horribly disorganized, as you said, and that created a fear that the army could step in at any moment and reimpose order, which would be a terrible prospect for Egypt's revolution. It would basically end Egyptian democracy. And there is an element in the opposition known as the ultras. They are basically football hooligans who have no politics except that they hate cops. And they've been attacking Muslim Brotherhood offices, the Freedom and Justice Party offices, up and down the country. And I think that the reason they're doing this, and my view will probably be confirmed by some interviews in the next day or two, that they are trying to create enough instability to provoke a junior officers' coup to basically bring back the army, end Egyptian democracy, but also end the rule of the Muslim Brotherhood. Finally, I think what we're witnessing is a discrediting of political Islam as a force of national renewal, and that it will just have to proceed for, you know, days and years beyond December 15th before common Egyptians see that, contrary to the Muslim Brotherhood's slogan, Islam is the answer. A new form of politics which incorporates Islam but also incorporates a sort of democratic democratic culture that's brewing in the streets of Egypt is the real answer to the situation here.
Do you think that this, I mean, assuming that the ultras are doing this as a way of creating some sense of instability to introduce the military, is the idea that if the military does take over or exits this coalition with the Muslim Brotherhood being bought off by, you know, sort of a, I guess, more respect within the context of the Morsi government. In the event that that takes place, is there a sense that it's an easier path to democracy if the military actually stages a coup, because it will give time for the opposition to organize and to sort of coalesce? Or is this is that a widely held belief, or are people wrestling with that idea, or what?
I think there are people in the opposition elements that would like to see the army reimpose some kind of order. I mean, the economy's struggling right now badly because of the instability. But I don't think that the controlled elements of the opposition, like the National Salvation Front, would want anything to do with that. And so that's why the National Salvation Front has basically called off its boycott and is campaigning now for a no vote against the referendum. Because by boycotting and calling for escalation, they've been using this language of escalation in the streets, that only intensifies the instability and the violence and threatens to provoke the army to reimpose order. And I mentioned earlier in this interview that Morsi has authorized the army to arrest citizens.
Right.
This is just a way of mollifying the army and bringing them into Morsi's camp. I think this is the long game of the Brotherhood, is to win the sympathy of the army. But it's sort of ironic because they have traditionally, been the victims of army repression.
Now, where's the U.S. in this? Because to the extent that the United States has any sort of deep-seated ties to any element of Egyptian society, it would be the military. And people should know, just as a little background, that the military in Egypt is also one of the biggest players in the economy, because they own a lot of a lot of industry,
and
hotels, and they're involved in a lot of industry in Egypt, and also there's a deep-seated ties between the U.S. military and the Egyptian military. Much of our aid goes sort of into the economy in Egypt via the military. So where is the U.S. in this?
That's the big question. But and clearly, I mean, the U.S. is always going to be in bed with the military. They give billions to the Egyptian military basically to keep the peace with Israel. The only policy that really defines the United States in the Middle East is doing everything. everything it can to protect Israel. And so you have them pumping billions into this corrupt institution, which, as you said, controls one third of the country. And, you know, that putting money in the hands of sort of an untouchable elite that exists above the state. At the same time, there are people in the opposition, liberals and leftists, who believe that the U.S. is propping up Morsi and that the U.S. has a long game of backing the Islamist strong horse here. And so there's a lot of resentment among the opposition against the U.S. And I walk around telling people I'm from Spain or Germany because, you know, the resentment in the streets is so profound.
What do you think about the rationale behind that? I mean, do you think it's possible that the U.S. is playing that game just because
there's no doubt that just look at the timing of the constitutional decree. It was the day after Morsi was delegated.
Oh, are you there?
Got sort of carte blanche from the U.S. to act as he wanted domestically. In exchange for keeping the peace with Israel. And the U.S. was clearly reluctant to criticize Morsi, and there's actually very little they can say against him anyway. Because if you look at the way that, you know, the Bahraini government is cracking down on its opposition, and the U.S., the statements that Hillary Clinton and the U.S. has issued, where they just basically blame both sides, there's very little precedent from the U.S. side for criticizing what Morsi's doing, who is still, despite everything, an elected leader.
So, tie it back to what you had mentioned at the beginning of the interview, the difficulty getting from Egypt to Gaza may very well be a function of this new relationship between the United States and Morsi's government. That, we have one major overriding interest, which is not whether or not what your constitution says or whether the role of the military, but that you protect Israel's interest when it comes to particularly your border with Gaza.
Yeah, I mean, that's the key way that Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood and the rulers of the new Egypt can demonstrate their goodwill towards the U.S. is by participating in this, basically, most directly, by participating in the siege of Gaza, in Israel's siege of Gaza, and just being complicit in it. And we're seeing that by the isolation of journalists who seek to get there. But we're seeing it in many other ways. The Rafah crossing is still, you know, is not as open as many people thought it would be. But there's another thing that I forgot to mention, which is the IMF loan. Morsi basically has been desperate to authorize this IMF loan that'll keep the state afloat, especially at a time of instability. And the U.S. is controlling the reins of the IMF. And so they demanded that Morsi, 2 days ago, raise taxes on everything from cigarettes and tobacco. You know, Egyptians love to smoke hookahs, beer, butane gas, petroleum, pretty much all the essentials of life. In order to get this loan, basically the IMF demanded massive austerity at a time when Morsi is going to the polls to vote for where Egyptians will basically decide the political future of the Muslim Brotherhood and its constitution. And Morsi had to cancel those taxes because it was too politically perilous for him. So he's lost the loan so far. And so this is another angle that the U.S. can play and that the international community is playing. They're bullying Morsi and into punishing the common people of Egypt with his political future hanging over his head.
Now, getting back to this referendum, you said that there's about half the judges from the judges union, I guess, basically saying we're going to boycott this. From what you're telling us, there's a twofold strategy. One is where some elements of the opposition are going to vote or trying to organize a vote against no, and then another part of the opposition is trying to delegitimize the vote so that this inevitable outcome will still be in some ways on less, I guess, firm ground.
And 90% of those judges won't participate. There are judicial elements that will participate, but it's still a question whether there will be enough legal experts to make this a valid referendum, to make the vote valid. And I think that's like a caveat that the opposition has, or sort of a loophole they have for getting out of the vote even after they have canceled the boycott and are campaigning actively around the country for a no vote. We'll just have to wait until Saturday, and I think Saturday will be a bizarre day here, an unpredictable day. And honestly, I guess my ear close enough to the ground to issue any reliable predictions, but it seems, from my experience watching politics in the U.S. and around the world, I've never seen anything like this before.
Do you have a sense of what the opposition is planning in the event that they do, that this the Constitution is approved?
No, but this will, depending on the margin it's approved by, it could be a devastating moment for the forces. The language that Morsi and his advisors are using is that a very small but highly influential elite is provoking instability around Egypt, and that they have no real grassroots base like the Brotherhood does. And if that view is validated, the opposition will kind of fragment and return to and some elements will move into irrelevance, but I think their numbers are much larger than the Brotherhood predicts that they are, and the conventional wisdom here is that they'll get demolished at the polls, but I don't actually see that happening. I think there's a lot of anger at Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood, and that the way he's handled this constitution is politically self-destructive because of his exclusivist mindset, his failure to include more factions in Egypt, and his inability to forge ties with anyone who isn't in line with the Brotherhood's narrow ideology.
All right. Well, Max, thank you so much for taking the time. I appreciate it. It's been fascinating to hear your reporting, and we will point anybody to anything that you write, in the wake of this. We've, of course, got it on our site right now, what you've written at nsfwcorp.com. Max, thanks so much, and good luck with all your work in Egypt.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Sam.
All right, folks. Sorry about the quality of the call towards the end there, but we're calling Egypt.
That was exhilarating.
That was exhilarating. A great right report. Very, yes. So that was Max Blumenthal. Folks, I don't know if he was talking on a Samsung Galaxy phone, like the kind that you can get from Credo. I want to read a couple of emails, because I got to be more explicit, I guess, with what's going on here. The Credo Mobile deal, as you know, we had Becky Bond, the political director of Credo, on yesterday, just before the Ken Burns interview, which I would highly recommend both of those, frankly. This has been a good week. Holy cow. The listener Mark emails me and says, the contract buyout. Understand that with this deal, and this deal is only good till December 31st from Credo. If you go to credomobile.com/majority, you will see there a picture of my face, one that I've never released before. And I think, it's a decent picture, right?
It's a great picture.
It's a very handsome picture, high enough quality that you could actually blow it up. And if you wanted to get a free Sam Cedar poster in your room, you could do that. But the deal is this. You get 40% off your voice fees for the first year. You get a $350 credit to offset any cost that you have for switching over to Credo. Listener Mark emails me, says the contract buyout is pretty awesome, but you still need to pay off, say, Verizon or whomever, the full amount, and then the amount is credited by Credo. So in other words, if it's going to cost you $200 to get rid of your AT&T or $300 or $350 to get rid of your AT&T or Verizon contract, then what happens is your first $350 worth of bills from Credo is basically wiped out. It was months before I had another phone bill, but I did have to come up with the money to pay off my previous contract. If you let listeners know that from the get-go, they will be more than happy with Credo paying off their penalty to their other provider. So there's that. And the rates, as far as I've been told, are less or comparable to other plans. Also, according to listener Larry, we've used Credo for about 4 years. Since we text much more than phone, their unlimited data option is mandatory. They have unlimited data. I use a BlackBerry. She has a Samsung Transform, which is an Android, both of which require their own suite of services, which include phone, text, unlimited internet, but with no slowdown throughout each month. Even though we live under tall trees on an island in the middle of Puget Sound. Oh, my God, I'm jealous. We get adequate 3G service. Occasionally spotty. But they live on an island with trees. I wouldn't mind living on an island. Also, in terms of Credo Action, they send out a lot of emails for their social causes, but you can select whatever level of involvement you want. So it is a great company. They're making a great deal to you if you sign up by December 31st through credomobile.com/majority. And, of course, they're sponsoring this program for the month and basically experimenting to see if, one, and they're going to be sending out information about the show to their massive email list. So it's a huge benefit to this show, this relationship, and it's, you know, it's been the type of sponsorship type of relationship that I've been looking for. So if you have the opportunity, at least go check out the deal, check out what they're doing on the political side as well. And remember, you got to do this by December 31st. Which is the end of 2012. All right, we got to take a break. We're going to head into the better half of the program. There, this is quite a day. Oh. I should have said this up front. Folks, during the Christmas break, we're going to do our now traditional annual famous best of shows. So if you have suggestions for best of interviews, for those of you who are members, maybe best of libertarian calls or best of random rushes, send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at majorityfm, @majorityfm. Let us know what you think is the best of the year. Oh, and one more thing. 10 lucky new Credo Mobile signer uppers will have the, if they want it, I will record your outgoing voicemail message. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I'll do that. All right, we're going to take a break. I'll do that. We got to take a break. We'll head into the better half of the program. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920 is the number. We will take your IMs at Majority FM. We will talk about this just sort of wonderful quote from a Republican leader in the House about his a-hole factor problem. We'll be right back after this.